This podcast is brought to you by Google Chrome. Increase team productivity and work smarter. Get proactive security with help from Google in every tab. If you're IT, choose Chrome browser for your enterprise. To download, visit g.co/chrome/choosechrome.
This is your tech news briefing for Wednesday, March 2nd. I'm Zoe Thomas for the Wall Street Journal. As Ukraine fights back against the Russian invasion, a loosely organized group of hackers is playing a key role. On today's show, WSJ Pro cybersecurity reporter David Uberti is back with us to discuss this kind of volunteer hacktivism and some of the unintended consequences it could lead to. That's after these headlines. Russian forces have started bombarding civilian areas in Ukraine, including striking the main TV tower in the capital Kyiv. Ukraine's communications authority said the attack temporarily disabled the country's central TV channels from broadcasting. Authorities said reserve broadcast facilities would be switched on. Russia's defense ministry had warned that it planned to strike Ukrainian intelligence and communications facilities in central Kyiv and urged residents living nearby to flee. More reactions to Russia's invasion from the tech sector. YouTube is joining the list of platforms blocking Russian state-owned media. On Tuesday, the online video giant said it would block channels connected to RT and Sputnik across Europe. The move comes as European leaders pressure big tech companies and traditional broadcasting services to cut off these channels in an effort to stop what they view as Russian propaganda. Other platforms, such as TikTok, have also blocked Russian channels in Europe. And Facebook parent Meta expanded its restrictions on the channels, demoting posts from them across its platforms globally, making them harder for users to come across. Meanwhile, a growing number of companies are either limiting or abandoning their operations in Russia. Among them, Dell, which said it's suspending sales there. The company said it's monitoring the situation to figure out its next steps and working to assist employees affected by the conflict. Apple is also taking steps to reduce its business in Russia, saying it would stop selling its products there. It's also blocking apps from state-owned media from being downloaded on its app store outside of Russia, and it's limiting the use of Apple Pay within Russia. Apple also said it's disabled traffic and live incidents from its Maps app in Ukraine. And leaders in the global biotech industry are calling on their U.S. counterparts to halt business deals in Russia as a way to protest the invasion and pressure oligarchs with ties to the Kremlin. More than 300 biotech executives and investors have signed a letter pledging to stop doing business with Russian companies. Other actions they're calling for include halting most trade, except for food and medicine, and rejecting money from Russian investment funds. All right, coming up, how a modern army online is delivering blows in the war in Ukraine. We'll discuss street fighting and cyber war. That's after the break.
If you're IT, Chrome is the browser for your enterprise. Increase team productivity and work smarter. Get proactive security with help from Google in every tab. Choose Chrome today. To download, visit g.co/chrome/choosechrome.
Last week, we talked about the role cyber attacks were playing in the war in Ukraine, and some of the blows that had already been struck against government websites and businesses there. Well, now we're seeing the counterattacks, and it's not quite what experts expected. While Ukraine's military is arming civilians from all walks of life, the country's also asking those with computer skills to join another sort of regiment, its so-called IT Army. Joining us to discuss this group's role in the conflict and just how effective their operations could be is WSJ Pro cybersecurity reporter and regular guest of the show, David Uberti. Thanks for being here, David.
Hey, Zoe. Thanks for having me.
So this IT Army, it's not really a military unit. Who's in it and how is it organized?
So over the weekend, Ukrainian officials put out a call for essentially civilian hackers to help them target various Russian websites with pretty rudimentary cyber attacks. So Ukrainian officials started a Telegram channel, which is a messaging app, sort of a mix between Twitter and WhatsApp, where they're actually putting out different targets, different websites within Russia, as well as their IP addresses to more or less direct this group of people to try to disrupt, or in some cases, deface some of these websites with anti-war messaging. Now, the big caveat here is that we don't know exactly who's a part of this group. We've talked to a number of Ukrainian cybersecurity and IT professionals who have lent some of their expertise to the Ukrainian government in this effort, but the Telegram channel itself has about 260,000 members as of Tuesday morning. What's more, many of the messages that they're posting when they're talking about targets are in English. So it does raise the question of how many of these folks are actually in Ukraine, or whether they could be coming in from other countries, potentially even English-speaking countries, to contribute to this low-level set of cyber attacks.
Okay, so what are they attacking then, and how much damage have they caused so far?
On Monday, for example, this group claimed responsibility for taking down websites for the Moscow Exchange, which is the largest stock exchange in Russia, which happened to stop trading on Monday morning as well. The point being to cause additional confusion for folks as they're understanding what's going on. They also claimed responsibility for taking down the website for a key Russian bank. Their stated goal in doing so was, like I said, to add chaos and confusion as many Russians are trying to withdraw funds from their bank accounts as well. So it's a mixture of, you know, private sector organizations, including media outlets, as well as some of these state websites or state-owned institutions such as banking services as well.
So David, you were on the show last week and we were talking about the threat of cyber war and potentially a hybrid war, which essentially blends online war and in-person fighting. Is that what we're seeing here with the IT army?
I would say yes and no. In the weeks leading up to the Russian invasion, you had a lot of Western officials warning of cyber warfare. The fear was a sort of first strike by the Kremlin to either disable Ukrainian energy infrastructure or some ways disrupt their ability to respond militarily to the Russian army. And on the most part, we haven't seen that. There has been sort of, you know, quote unquote, decapitation strike in a cybersecurity sense. On the other hand, we have seen sort of this emerging street fight among a lot of these non-state combatants, including folks in the Ukrainian side of things, this IT army, as it was, in addition to a number of ransomware operators who are normally understood to operate out of Russian spheres of influence. So you have this sort of weird emerging dynamic where we are not seeing these sort of high-level state-directed cyber attacks between these two countries, but we are having these sort of very loosely organized groups sort of trade punches with this set of skirmishes trying to take down different websites or web services and what have you.
So when they take these down, I'm assuming it doesn't have the same kind of long-term damage that some of the malware attacks that we saw leading up to the invasion and that we've been talking about over the years have. They're just taking down a website.
More or less. And like I said, the goal is to create confusion in many instances. If you're a hacker and you're installing malware on some organization's computer systems, you could disable that organization's ability to function for the long term. That could create, you know, weeks, if not months, of problems. It could force them to move to pencil and paper to keep records or to do sort of their day-to-day operations. When we're talking about some of these website defacements, you know, what we're actually seeing is hackers actually replacing, you know, what you would see in a normal web page with anti-war messaging. One example I saw from a Ukrainian was actually really graphic imagery of Russian soldiers who've died in the battlefield over the course of time. You know, their point being that we want to show, you know, people in Russia who may at this particular point be going to this URL, they can actually see the impact of this invasion on some of the people who are in the Russian military. So this could be brief. They could be temporary takedowns of websites, but the goal of this, you know, IT army, as it were, is just to flood the system with an overwhelming amount of them in order to cause some confusion and then also contribute to a broader sort of information campaign to try to influence public opinion within Russia.
The IT army isn't the only group hacking systems in Russia. Over the weekend, the group Anonymous took responsibility for an attack on Russian government websites. Can you just briefly explain what happened there?
Sure. Yeah. The hacker collective Anonymous, which is sort of well known in the hacktivist community, claimed that it hacked the Russian Ministry of Defense and released sensitive data about troops. Subsequently, there were also a number of Russian websites defaced with Anonymous branding, claiming to be warning the Russian people against going along with this invasion of Ukraine. Now, this is sort of where we get into very murky territory with a lot of these non-state operations. Anonymous's motivations aren't totally clear in this case. They've said that they oppose the Kremlin on political grounds, but they could also be trying to buy publicity. We don't really know. It's a collective. So that's sort of emblematic of why these situations are so difficult to understand and follow for people who are on the ground.
What about Russia's response? Have they said anything about these cyber attacks?
I mean, not specifically from the Kremlin, for example. They have said in the past that they opposed malicious cyber activity as well. But like I said at the outset, it is notable that there has not been some of this wide-scale cyber operations from the Kremlin that a lot of people suspect of. You know, the obvious fear when you have a lot of these groups that aren't, you know, specifically tied to a government carrying out, you know, activity in a conflict is that they could lead to confusion that then in turn leads to escalation of a sort. If the IT Army of Ukraine, a group of, you know, volunteers hacks the wrong organization or defaces the wrong website, you know, what sort of response does that draw from Russia and sort of official Russian military operations as well? Those are some of the questions that a lot of folks both inside and outside of Ukraine have, particularly, you know, folks in Washington when they're sort of gauging what to do in response to this. They don't want to get into this tit for tat situation with, you know, the Kremlin over cyber activity. But having a lot of these variables injected into the situation could potentially make that more difficult.
All right. That was WSJ Pro cybersecurity reporter David Uberti. Thanks for joining us, David.
Thanks for having me.
And that's it for today's Tech News Briefing. If you want more tech stories, check out our website, WSJ.com. And if you like our show, please rate and review it. You can do that wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for your interest in the WSJ podcasts from The Wall Street Journal. We're always looking to improve, and we're interested in hearing your opinions. Please go to WSJ.com/survey and take a survey that will help us bring you more of the content you're looking for. Thank you for your time and support.